Sports Talk 750.
Hi, I'm looking for Ray Finkel and a clean pair of shorts.
There was a time in this country when sports were revered. But people today, their values were all out of whack.
Artest looking, gets it to Bryant. Bryant dribbling, has to put it up with the buzzer. Banks it in! And the Lakers win the game!
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers only.
John Stockton sends the Utah Jazz to the NBA Final!
And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah. Yeah!
3 major college football programs have fired their head coach this season. Welcome to another edition of Drive Time Sports. KOAL 107.3 FM and 7.50 AM. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. Always happy to be with you on the afternoon drive. And yes, the Oregon Ducks pulled the trigger last night. Mark Helfrich has been fired after a disappointing 4-8 season. That was breaking news late last night. So now you have Oregon and Texas looking for a new head coach. And LSU got rid of Les Miles earlier in the season. So 3 major college football programs firing their head coach within the last couple of months. Helfrich wasn't bad at Oregon. It wasn't that long ago, just 2 years ago, that Oregon was playing in the national championship game. But it is a what-have-you-done-for-me-lately type deal. 4 seasons as Oregon's head coach, led the team to the college football playoff championship game in its first year. Then they faltered, had a 5-game losing streak this season, finished at the bottom of the Pac-12 North with just 2 conference wins. Helfrich was 37-16 after taking over for Chip Kelly back in 2013. Here's the kicker. He also had a huge hand in recruiting Marcus Mariota, and he also was the offensive coordinator at that time. And so he had a big hand in Mariota winning the Heisman. I mean, he helped bring Mariota to Oregon. All that was forgotten. And he also had an $11.6 million buyout in his contract. So he left last night with $11.5 million in his pocket to not coach Oregon. Helfrich met with Rob Mullins, the athletic director. Again, that was late last night. Helfrich did issue a statement saying he was honored to have served at Oregon. Said, quote, plain and simple, we didn't win enough games this season. Again, they go 4-8. They're not going bowling. But to me, here's the question. When teams are firing coaches, specifically at this stage, you have to have a backup plan in mind. I mean, Texas fired Charlie Strong. They knew they were going to get Tom Herman. They knew. When LSU fired Les Miles, I don't think they wanted Les Miles back this season to begin with. And I know they didn't want Cam Cameron. So they were able to kill 2 birds with 1 stone, just fire them both at the same time. With Oregon, I don't know who's out there that actually works as an improvement. Do you get what I'm saying? Like, you have to have somebody in mind when you're a program like Oregon who doesn't pull in top 30 recruiting classes. That's so important to mention. They don't. Even when Chip Kelly was there, they didn't pull in top 10, top 20 recruiting classes. That's not what they do at Oregon. What they do is they find niche players and they make an impact. And it's always about closing, I get that, but if you look at the recruiting class for Oregon right now as it's dubbed, I got the recruiting rankings in front of me right now, Oregon's at 41. They don't have any 5-star recruits, they have 3 4-star recruits, and 9 3-star recruits. That's how Oregon builds their powerhouse. They bring in like track stars to run the style that Chip Kelly and Mark Helfrich brought to Oregon. But this is also a university that is walking in uncharted territory. They don't go through coaches very often. To talk about the continuity for Oregon football, they had a 40-season stretch. They went from Rich Brooks to Mike Bellotti to Chip Kelly to Helfrich. That's how Oregon works. So now who's out there? Chip Kelly's not coming back to Oregon. Duck fans, take that thought. Rip it up. Don't even put it in your back pocket. Rip it up into 1,000 pieces. Throw it away. Chip Kelly's not going back to Oregon. Maybe Dan Mullen from Mississippi State. I don't think it would be an improvement for Jim McElwain to leave Florida. Maybe PJ Fleck. I mean, he's got Western Michigan number 17 in the playoff rankings right now. Maybe you go with Brian Harsin at Boise State. I don't know. regardless, the pool of candidates is not jaw-dropping. And then there was a rumor that broke on Twitter just a while ago. You remember the story about Brian Kelly looking to explore other coaching options outside of Notre Dame? Well, there's a private jet that took off from Notre Dame to Eugene, from South Bend to Eugene, earlier today. Brian Kelly's not taking the Oregon job. I would be floored if he was to take that job. You got a private jet going from South Bend to Eugene the same night that, the day after Mark Helfrich gets fired. Sure, you can go ahead and correlate and speculate all you want. Don't think that happens. I just don't know where you go next. The Ducks, since losing Marcus Mariota, they've had problems at quarterback. Vernon Adams didn't work out for them. It's kind of up in the air. But look, this is college football. This is the world that we live in today. We can forget that Mark Helfrich was playing for the national championship just 2 years ago. Throw that at the door. He no longer has a job. And I wonder if he goes the same route as Charlie Strong. I would hire him as my offensive coordinator tomorrow. I'm talking about Helfrich. Just like I would have offered the defensive coordinator position to Charlie Strong right now. Like, you have guys that know how to coach aspects of the game. And I think it's probably best for Helfrich. He'll get another head coaching job if he wants one. He'll land somewhere. He'll build up that offense. He'll land another head coaching job. People love offense. He's an offensive-minded coach. Unfortunately, this season, Oregon was very bad, and because of it, he no longer has a job. We take a look at some of the other news and notes coming out of college football today. Texas running back Dante Foreman has signed with an agent. He will enter the NFL draft after leading the nation in rushing with 2,028 yards. He's a junior, surpassed the 100 rushing yard mark in each of his past 13 games at Texas. He became the second 2,000 rusher in school history, joining only Ricky Williams. He announced his decision to go pro earlier today. It's been a quiet afternoon as far as the national sports go, but there's more on the college football end of things, and this is actually a really fun topic, and hopefully, I don't know that we're going to have time to dive into this a little bit later, so I'm going to give you a condensed version of it right now. People are really, really anxious for this Navy-Temple game on Saturday for the AAC title. You say, who cares? Actually, a lot of people care about this game that have to maneuver the Bulls. Think about this. If Navy wins the American, it's in contention for the Group of Five bid in a New Year's Day Six Bowl. And a win for Navy on Saturday could force the College Football Playoff Selection Committee to delay announcing the highest-ranked Group of Five because Navy plays Army on December 10th, 6 days after its final rankings are revealed. The domino effect on other bowls could, quote, paralyze the system. Think about that. Delaying the Group of Five's bid to the Cotton Bowl would affect many games involving Group of Five teams. Official would have to delay placing teams in bowls without knowing whether a conference champion could get pulled into the Cotton Bowl. This is something that the playoff committee and this new Group of Five never considered, because Army-Navy is a tradition. It happens after the regular season is over for every other school. Again, I'm all for controlled chaos, especially with the current system that we have in college football right now. I hope Navy wins running away on Saturday just to throw another wrench into the process. Let's take a look at the NBA schedule. No Jazz ball tonight. No, they played well last night. Utah winning for the fourth consecutive game. We'll talk more Utah Jazz basketball in just a bit. 5 o'clock games tonight. Sacramento at Philadelphia. Detroit will be at Boston. Memphis at Toronto. 6 p.m. tonight. The Lakers at the United Center to take on the Bulls. The Thunder will play host to the Wizards. We get the Knicks at Minnesota. San Antonio at Dallas. 7 o'clock hour. Miami at Denver. Atlanta will then travel to take on Phoenix. And in the nightcap at 8 p.m. tonight, Indiana will take on Portland. The Jazz return to the court tomorrow at home as they take on the Miami Heat. As a quick look of everything that's happening on the national sports front, coming up next, we're going to talk a little local basketball. Coach Vando will join us on the show. We'll give you an update as far as the regions for high school sports. You know, we're at that threshold, that realignment period. The first consideration for regions was announced last night. We'll briefly go over that, and if we have time, we'll explore it again later on in the show. Plus, Jameson Welsh, great friend of the show, will join us to talk some NBA basketball. It's all straight ahead here on Drive Time Sports. Reporting from the KOAL 107.3 FM newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini with a look at local sports. Last night, the Emory Lady Sporton basketball team continued to roll as they improved to 2-0 by knocking off South Sevier 70-40. It marks the second consecutive win by large double digits for the Lady Spartans. In the victory, Megan Jensen led the way with 16 points, while Bailey Hugger chipped in with 12. Caselyn Toomer, Kinley Toomer, and Laney Jensen all finished with 9 as Emory knocked down 3 3-point shots in the contest. Kylie Jensen scored a game-high 20 points to lead South Sevier, and outside of that, it was all Emory. Now, the Lady Spartans will continue the season this Friday as they return to the court against North Summit. This contest is scheduled for a 7 p.m. tip-off. You will be able to listen to the live broadcast of this game on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 a.m. Again, tip-off is set for 7 p.m. It was just 2 weeks ago that the Utah High School Activities Association made an announcement of which schools had been recommended for certain classifications regarding athletics. With 6 classifications now developed, last night the Utah High School Activities Association Board of Trustees met and passed the first consideration of regions for the 2017 through 2019 initial placement of schools. The biggest change for Emory High School would be that they are now a solid 3A athletic squad. Emory, who has been 2A for the last several years, have been catapulted to the 3A classification, Region 15, where they would share the region in all sports outside of football with Grand, Manti, North San Pete, Richfield, South Sevier, and San Juan. Carbon would be a part of Region 14. They would share that division with American Leadership, Delta, Juab, Mesa Prep, Providence Hall, and Union. Football would look pretty similar for both squads. Carbon and Emory would once again be a member of the 3A classification. The North would have Carbon, Emory, Grantsville, Judge, Morgan, and Union combined. The South would have Juab, Juan Diego, Manti, North San Pete, Richfield, and Summit Academy. You can take a look at the full classifications and regions at CastleCountryRadio.com. A public hearing will be held on Wednesday, December 7th at 6 p.m. in an attempt to get feedback from the various districts. All this information and more is available at CastleCountryRadio.com. We move over to the national sports scene, and this past Saturday on KOAL, the Utah Utes wrapped up the 2016 college football season with a loss to the Colorado Buffaloes. Utah finished the season 8-4, and they will now await their fate. Could be the Foster Farms Bowl, the Sun Bowl, or, once again, the Las Vegas Bowl. Yesterday on KOAL's Drive Time Sports, we were joined by head coach Kyle Whittingham, and he talked about the difficult final stretch for the Utes as they ended the season with back-to-back losses.
It is tough, but it's better than not being in the mix, I can tell you that for certain. And so, you know, the positive is for 3 years now we've been knocking at the door and in the hunt into November, but the negative is we haven't been able to break through and get there. And so, you know, it's back to the drawing board this off season. We got to go back out and recruit.
I asked Coach Whittingham if he had a preference on the bowl selection process for the Utes, be it the Foster Farms, Sun, or Vegas Bowl.
Yeah, I don't lose any sleep over it. I don't lobby. I don't get out and try to get in the media and you know, make a case for us. I just, you know, we have a body of work that we have during the course of the regular season, and you know, and if Washington does win, like you said, that and that does elevate them to the playoffs, then everyone bumps up a slot in the bowl picture in the conference, because obviously Washington is going a different direction. And so, but we'll just have to see. You know, like I said, just tell us when to be there and where to be and who we're playing, and that's all we need to know.
You can listen to this complete interview by going to CastleCountryRadio.com and clicking on the Drive Time Sports link. And finally, today on KOAL's Drive Time Sports, we'll talk junior college basketball as we are joined by Coach Vando with the USU Eastern Eagle squad. USU Eastern has lost their last 6 consecutive basketball games. They'll look to get back on track this weekend as they play host to a pair at the BDAC. Coach Vando will join the show at 4:15 p.m. Drive Time Sports gets underway at 4 p.m. You can find more news, sports, and community events at CastleCountryRadio.com. Reporting from the KOAL Newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini.
What you listening to?
Big Sports Radio Guy.
Prepare the water cooler, that we may gather around it later and discuss the...
It's time for the Coach's Corner on Drive Time Sports.
Wednesday edition of the Coach's Corner here on Drive Time Sports. Yesterday, we had Coach Kyle Whittingham of the Utah Ute football team on. He talked about the 2016 season. If you missed that interview, you can listen to it at CastleCountryRadio.com. Just click on the Drive Time Sports link. Today, we're going to talk USU Eastern basketball. Right now, the team's sitting 2-8 overall on the men's side of the court. Most recently, they've suffered a 6-game losing skid. They'll look to get back on the winning track this weekend, back-to-back home games on Friday and Saturday. And joining us to talk a bit about that, we have Coach Vando of the Eagle squad. And as always, Coach, we appreciate you making time for us.
Hey, thank you very much for having me over here.
Coach, did you guys have a good Thanksgiving?
Yes, you know, like I said, always, you know, freezing, you know, I still need to adjust that, but Thanksgiving is always good. You know, we had a team, you know, Thanksgiving dinner. We could have sit and talking how blessed we are, you know, for to playing basketball, represent USU Eastern, and having the opportunity to have an education. So was good on, you know, very, very, very good.
You guys traveled to Wyoming. Unfortunately, two losses. Lost to Western Wyoming, and then a loss to Laramie. Laramie's a pretty good basketball team, though.
Yes, they have two bigs, one from Europe, another one from Australia. They're very good. They're the heart of that team, and they play really good, you know, against us. Was a close game, but at the end of the day, you know, they won and they deserve it.
I didn't get to watch the games, but just looking at the box scores, you guys had a hard time putting two halves together. It looked like you shot the ball fairly efficiently in one half in one game, but you couldn't in the second half. Missed a lot of shots inside the perimeter, and the three-point shooting was kind of inconsistent as well, it looked like.
Yes, and the big, you know, we feel like our point guard, Quinn Peters, you know, he didn't play both games, and we miss him, you know, very much on these two games. You know, he's the man who can run the team for us. He can organize and get, you know, people involved. And also, he's a good scorer. So without him on the court, you know, like was tough because the other point guard, you know, Nicholas Chapotnik from Brazil, he did okay. But and then after that, we don't have a truly point guard. So we had to put Jensen often, who was coming like from injury, like he was out for the last, you know, two months. So we just put him on the fire, but like you said, it was hard. You know, our 3-point shot didn't fall, and we miss a lot of easy basket, like an inside, you know, on the paint, in the paint. We miss, I think, probably, you know, each game 8 to 10 easy layups.
You talk about the absence of Quinn Peters. Is the wrist okay for Quinn? Is he health wise? He's good, right?
Well, he's gonna get back to the doctor again on this Thursday and see if he got clear or not.
Okay.
So I hope so that because we need him on the court as soon as possible. Like I said, he's a leader of this team, and he can, you know, organize, you know, things on the court, you know, very, very well.
Seems like he has control over the team.
Yes,
he can calm them down in certain situations.
Yeah, you know that he have the respect from the players, from the, you know, of course, from the coaching staff. But he's naturally a leader, and he's a point guard like a 6'4", you know, he's a big point guard, and right there we have a hard, you know, match for the other point guards.
If we look over the course of the last 6 games, you guys have lost 6 consecutive games. Obviously, that can be quite trying on a basketball team and on a coaching staff as well. How have the guys handled 6 straight losses? What's their attitude right now?
Well, of course, you know, we know that we should win at least 5 of these 6 games. But, you know, we are very, disappointed, and we talk. But the good thing is, you know, they're still there, you know, with the heads up because we know that we can win. Just, you know, not clicking yet. And we missing some easy shots. And in our defensive, you know, and like we are struggling, you know, guard the ball right now. We know that we are right there, but you know we have to I don't know, put more effort or you know, something like that. Because, you know, the good thing, like I said, everybody knows that we are very capable. We just miss something that we don't know yet what it is. But I hope that, you know, after the Christmas break, you know, everything go back to the normal. And then the other thing, like since the first semester, I don't have the whole team. Never. Like right now we have three guys injured. So during the whole semester, you know, some guys in and out because, you know, got injured, got hurt. And we could, you know, have the whole team yet. I hope that second semester, you know, everybody get healthy and we have our 15 guys.
Again, our guest right now is Coach Vando with the USU Eastern men's basketball team. Coach, you guys play a lot of man-to-man defense. With the injuries, do you anticipate changing that up a bit? Is zone an option for you guys defensively?
Yes, we right now we playing, you know, like before the injury, like, you know, my perspective was 70% man, 30% zone. But right now with all these injuries and we are forced to play a little bit of zone. And so now we just almost switch. We are now probably going to be 70% zone and 30% man.
Let's move on and talk about the set of home games for you guys this weekend. These were added games. They weren't on the initial schedule, but you guys do get another opportunity to play at the BDAC. Only four games at home before conference play starts. That's a brutal schedule, but at least you guys are home this weekend.
Oh, yeah, that definitely it's another opportunity to play in front of our fans. But like you said, it's a hard schedule, but when I put this schedule together, I like it, you know, to have some really good competition. Like we played against, you know, two ranked teams. And like for me as a coach, I want to compete. I want to play against the real, you know, good teams to prepare us to play in our conference, since that, you know, this year is going to be real tough. Like we're going to play four times against each other in conference. That's brutal. And then, like I said, well, maybe if we put, you know, try to match the level of the competition that we're going to face on the second semester, then our conference is going to be good. But like I said, unfortunately, we have that things that we cannot control, like injuries, got, you know, players got hurt. You know, this is, I think, you know, killing us right now. But like I said, every day is an opportunity. We're going to try to win, you know, the next two games, you know, at home. And then we still have two games at a tournament at Snow. And maybe we can finish this first semester probably 6-9 or 6-8. Almost like, you know, 500.
Yeah, if you could string together a couple of wins before going into Christmas break, that'd be big. Following the weekend at home this week, you guys go on the road one more time, right, before we go into the holiday break?
Yes, we're going to play at Ephraim. So Snow's going to hold the tournament, and we have two games over there on December 9 and 10.
With that being said, Snow College, this is a team that, of course, we're going to get to know here very soon, playing them four times. Coach, what do you make of the Scenic West Athletic Conference? Have you paid attention to what teams have done?
Yes, you know, they like I said, you know, they every year, you know, they are very, very good. Like have a, you know, the level of talent are pretty high. The coaches in our conference, they're pretty good too. So I think right now CSI it's doing great.
Yep.
You know, like they have, you know, again, a very, you know, big team, very athletic, who can press, or, you know, the full court, like a, you know, CSI team. In Salt Lake, it's totally different. They're more experienced. They execute very, very well. Very disciplined. Can hold the ball. Can execute. Can they run their stuff really, really good? And Snow this year, you know, they have a mix of, you know, shooters and bigs, and they're doing great, great job. You know, coach over there is doing great job. And also CNCC have size this year, and they like I said, we don't have a break. You know, when we played against, you know, each other in our conference, it's hard. You know, anyone can beat, you know each other. You know, it's hard. If you don't bring your 100% every night, of course you're gonna lose.
We can end with this, Coach. This weekend, Impact Academy and Utah Empire. I always tell people these are trap games. You never know what Impact Academy is going to bring. Every now and then they bring in a kid or two that's a true player that should be playing at a JUCO or even at a D1 or D2 school. That's a dangerous game, always.
Oh, yeah, especially Impact. They have, this year, they have four teams. So they have one just like an international ones. The kids that are very, very good, like, you know, all the big, you know, Division One programs are looking at these kids. And also, you know, Utah Empire, it's a bunch of, you know, D1 guys who played for the Utah, for BYU, for, high programs, you know, they're very smart. So they're not being practicing, but they know how to play.
Right.
So I think it's going to be good for us and see, you know, really like two kind of different teams. So Utah Empire maybe going to, you know, move the ball really, really well and be smart. But and then, you know, Impact, they want to run against us and try to score as much as they can. You know, that's two games that we need, you know, adjust and hope, you know, match, you know, with these guys. And we expect to win these two games. But like I said, it's not easy. You got to bring your 100%, you know, both nights.
Well, Coach, I always appreciate you taking out the time to come in. Thank you again. Best of luck this weekend. We'll see you at the BDAC on Saturday.
Oh, thank you very much. And one more time, and I hope that, you know, we'll see you over there, and maybe we're going to celebrate two wins.
I think we get two wins this weekend, Coach.
I hope so.
Thanks, Coach.
Thanks.
Again, Coach Vando with the USU Eastern Men's Basketball Squad. We've got to pause for just a moment. When we come back, we're going to talk to Jamison Welsh, NBA Basketball. He joins us once a week. He travels all over the country covering NBA ball, so we'll get a report from him. And we'll talk about the Utah Jazz. Winners of four straight following last night's victory over Houston. That's coming up next here on Drive Time Sports.
This is Derek Favors, number 15 from the Utah Jazz. You're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini.
3-point game, Harris. Pick and roller. Favors takes it strong and one. Oh my. Watch Derek Favors take a leap right here.
We're back on Drive Time Sports, KOL, 107.3 FM, 750 AM. Time for our weekly NBA segment with Jamison Welsh. I believe the hype, NBA.com. There's plenty to talk about in the NBA, including the Utah Jazz, who have now won four consecutive games following their win last night, topping the Houston Rockets, who have actually played pretty good basketball so far this season. We'll talk about that and more with Jamison right now. As always, Jamison, I appreciate the time today. Thank you.
Not a problem, man. Thanks for having me, as always. Definitely appreciate it.
We'll start by talking about the Jazz. They've won four consecutive games. I went into this without going into great detail on the show yesterday. The Utah Jazz with George Hill are a completely different team. It's just that simple. This team was a game under 500 just a week and a half ago. George Hill comes back. Utah starts playing better basketball. I mean, as crazy as it sounds, throughout the first like 15 games, 16, 17 games of the season, he's been one of the most important players to any team in the league.
Well, remember, the Jazz over the last couple of years have had point guard issues. That's why they, you know, traded for Trey Burke. They drafted Dante Exum. They've been searching for that fix. They've been searching in different ways. You know, they've made trades for lower-tier guys to try to fill the, you know, Shelvin Mack. You know, they've tried so many different things, and they finally got a guy that can just run offense. You know, George Hill, he's the average point guard in this league, maybe slightly above average, depending on who you talk to. But he's a guy that he can he's a pro's pro. He's going to run your offense, going to get you in your sets. He's going to be able to score the ball a little bit. He's going to be able to do some things. So he helps them a whole lot. He brings that position from a below average mark to at least an average at worst, and you have an improved ball club. With him in the lineup, the Jazz are a playoff team. When he's not in the lineup, they struggle. It's the same story they've had for the last few years. The point guard spot in this NBA is very important. You need a guy that can hold their own, because if you can't have a guy that can't hold their own in this league, you're in trouble, because the guys you go up against every night is that damn good. So you have to be very, very careful with who you have playing that position. But George Hill's been a very big improvement for the Jazz. And, you know, the record speaks for itself when he's in the lineup versus when he's out of it.
Yeah, definitely. The Jazz have not lost a game this year when both Gordon Hayward and George Hill are playing. Hill's averaging 21 points per game, shooting 54% from the field. He's averaged 19 points per contest during the four-game winning streak. Gordon Hayward had a rough go of it during the Jazz four-game losing skid. But it just seems like this is a cohesive unit when these two are out there. 11-8, the combo of Hill and Hayward, the Jazz are 5-0. That's definitely something to watch. Now, Jameson, you and I have talked a lot about the Western Conference over the last little while here on the show. And the Clippers were a team at the beginning of the season. They were playing fantastic basketball. Everybody was on the Clipper bandwagon. For some reason, I've never been able to buy into this makeup of the Clippers. I know this is it for them. They either get it done this season, or you're probably going to see some mass changes within this organization. They've now lost three consecutive games on the road. They're 14-5. It's not a bad start. I get it. They're probably the third or fourth best team of the Western Conference. But there were actually pundits that thought that the Clippers could really challenge Golden State, that they would be the team that would be the number two seed, not San Antonio. And already 19 games into the season, I'm seeing flaws within this squad, and they've struggled on the road now three consecutive games.
It's not that they've struggled on the road. They've lost against teams they have no business losing.
Exactly, exactly.
Lost to the Pacers without Paul George. Lost to Detroit, which is, you know, Detroit's had some pieces that can give them problems. I see that. But the Pacers without Paul George, there's no excuse. And last night versus the Nets, that, and even without Blake Griffin, you can't lose that game. Here's the problem with the Clippers. They, when things are going well, they go very well. All things are clicking, all things are on point and whatnot. When their defense flips, like, you can't give up 126 to the Nets. Like, that just cannot happen. You can't do that. When that happens, when their defense is not as strong as it has been in the past, or especially over that streak that they had, then things get very tricky for them. The biggest problem for them, and it's going to be for a while, their defense in the backcourt isn't as good as people think it is. Chris Paul is still a very good player, but his defense isn't as strong as it has been in the past. And we know J.J. Redick is not a defensive stopper, so they really don't have anyone, especially off their bench. They don't have a guy that can guard guards. Like, they don't have a guy. Austin Rivers isn't going to tee anybody up. Same thing with Jamal Crawford. So if you have a backcourt that can score, they're in trouble. So, like, for instance, Golden State, we know what they do. We know they got two guys that can go for 40 any night or 40-plus any night. So basically you're saying that these two guys or this backcourt is supposed to stop the Warriors? I just don't see it. I mean, they let Sean Kilpatrick go for almost 40 last night.
38,
and
yeah.
Kilpatrick's almost like D-League guy. So they have some issues on defense they got to clear up. But honestly, I don't know if they can because the roster – it kind of is what it is right now. It's going to be that way for the end of the year. I think they're just reverting to the mean. I think the Clippers are still the third best team in the West. So at worst, you know, that's still a really good thing. But they got to get it figured out because you don't want to slip any further, and you want to have home court in that second round if possible. You don't want to be going on the road in a game seven situation in San Antonio, no matter what their team is looking like. So we'll see what happens. It's still a long season. They still have had an impressive start thus far, but you don't want to lose too many games. You got a big one coming up tomorrow versus Cleveland. Cleveland's coming off a loss, so that's going to be very interesting to see what kind of Clippers team we get and also what kind of Cavs team we get. So we should definitely see.
I can't recall the last time the three seed in the Western Conference to me was a death sentence. And that's what it is, because even if you get past the first round, which if you're a three seed, you're expected to knock off the six, I get that. But if you are the three seed of the West, you have to beat San Antonio and Golden State back-to-back without home court advantage. That's a death sentence. I don't care how good you are.
It's not going to happen. I mean, outside of injuries, this is not going to happen.
No.
It's a very tall task that you're asking teams to do, and it's just very difficult, especially the key thing you mentioned is without home court advantage. Like, I always say this, you can win one game on the road, but it's almost impossible to win two road games. It's very difficult to win two road games in a seven-game series. If you win two road games in a seven-game series, you usually end up winning that series.
Yeah.
But it's very difficult to win two games in San Antonio, and it's damn near impossible to win two games in Oakland. So we'll definitely see. But, yeah, whoever – you got to stay out of that third spot. I agree. You got to stay in that second spot for a lot of reasons. And that's going to be an interesting position – jockeying a position throughout the year between the Spurs and the Clippers, because we all know the Warriors are probably going to win, probably going to have the best record in the West. They're probably going to be the team that has the number one seed. But that second and third spot is going to be very interesting as the season goes on.
Again, our guest right now is Jamison Welsh, BelieveTheHypeNBA.com. Jamison, I want to talk about a player that doesn't get a whole lot of recognition, plays for the Milwaukee Bucks. You know exactly who I'm talking about. Giannis Antetokounmpo. Say that 10 times fast. He had 34 points, 12 boards, 5 assists, and 5 steals last night. Joins LeBron James as the only player in the past 30 seasons to have a 30-10-5-5 game before their 22nd birthday. This kid just gets better and better and better. Jason Kidd was on record earlier in the week saying he's not a household name because his name is too difficult to pronounce.
Well, I wouldn't say that. The biggest problem is, one, they're not very good. So you're not in the playoffs. You're not in any race or anything like that. So that's one thing. And two, they play in Milwaukee. So not a whole lot of people without league pass know about him. You know, that's just kind of
right.
how it goes. I mean, that's
right.
what the situation kind of is at this point. So, hey, it sucks. It's not the best thing. Us basketball people, we know about him. We've been knowing about him because he's that damn good. But the casual fan has really no clue he is unless he's on SportsCenter, because you're not going to watch a whole lot of Milwaukee Buck games. It's just not going to happen. If you're out here on the West Coast and you don't get off work till 5:30, most of the Buck games are either just starting or have already been going on for an hour. So it's a really tough situation. But he is worth the price of admission. He's a very good player. He should be an all-star this year. He's a future franchise, basically a franchise kind of guy. He's that guy. He's already the face of the Bucks already. But yeah, we'll see how long he's actually in Milwaukee. But for the time being, he's a very, very good young player his potential is limitless. His potential, there's nothing that would surprise me. If you say he's a top five player next year, it wouldn't surprise me. If you say he's a top three player in 3 years, it would not surprise me. He's just that good.
Yeah, he's averaging 23-6-8 right now so far this season, just playing phenomenal basketball. And I think you did peg it right on the head with him playing in Milwaukee. It's a little bit difficult for him to develop some of the attention that he would get with some of the other squads. Outside of Antetokounmpo, you and I were talking about the rookies before we went on the air. And Antetokounmpo's in his third year, but he's 6'11", and he can handle the basketball. He'll bring the basketball up court for you, for crying out loud. There's one other guy in L.A. that kind of fits that mold, and that's Brandon Ingram. You and I were talking about the rookies and some that have caught our eye. I mean, outside of Marquise Chris, I think it's safe to say that Brandon Ingram has been the most impressive rookie so far this season. Now, Joel Embiid technically is a rookie according to NBA rules, but based on this last draft class, outside of Brandon Ingram, has there been a better rookie?
Not that I can think of at all. I mean, of course, Ben Simmons is hurt, so it's a tough thing. Jaylen Brown's been up and down with the Celtics. You know, he's had some moments, but nothing too serious. For the most part, yeah, it has been Brandon Ingram. The Lakers haven't really asked Brandon Ingram to do a whole lot. You know, his role is definitely different than D'Angelo's, Russell's rookie year and what they're asking for him to do at the start of it. You know, so it's a little bit different. You know, they're not starting Brandon Ingram in most nights. You know, they bring him off the bench, kind of ease him into it. Eventually, he will be a starter. But from what he's done, I like what I've seen thus far from a basketball player. Whenever you have a guy at 6'9" that's comfortable in handling the basketball, bringing it up against pressure and being able to do so and get the team in its offense, that's always a good thing. Whenever you have another ball handler on the court that can handle the ball anywhere on the court and be comfortable with his handle, that's always a good thing. And we know what he can do offensively. The only knock I have on him is I want to see him be a little bit more aggressive and looking for his shot. I know he's trying to stay within the team, offense and whatnot, but I want to see him try to get his. I think he has the talent, he has the skill set to do so. It's just a mindset thing, because once that switch happens, I think he'd be a very, very good player in this league. When he decides, hey, I'm just going to go ahead and get mine real quick, I think he'd be a very, very special ball player in this league.
Again, Jamison Welsh, BelieveTheHypeNBA.com, joining us. Jamison, you cover the NBA all over the country. Where was the last arena you went to?
I was in Portland a couple weeks ago for Blazers Suns on election night. It was a pretty good game. Of course, on the West Coast, we don't play a whole lot of defense. You know, even the Jazz are probably one of the best defensive teams in the West. But you know, other than that, you have a lot of teams giving up 110 a night. You know, if you're watching the Lakers, Clippers. We know what the Warriors do, the Nuggets, the Blazers, Kings, Suns, all those teams score a bunch of points, and they give up a bunch of points. So it's entertaining basketball, to say. Like, and of course, the Rockets, we know what they do as well. But, you know, it's entertaining basketball. It's definitely entertaining to see a bunch of, you know, up-and-down action. But at the same time, it's a lot of points and a lot of defensive lapses. And, you know, people really aren't playing defense when games are 117, 115. Not a whole lot of defense being played.
Jameson, it's always a pleasure to get you on the show, talk NBA basketball. I really appreciate the time. I know we'll do it again next week. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Oh, not a problem, man. Thanks for having me. As always, stay warm out there. I know it's temperatures are kind of brisk out there, so try to stay as warm as possible.
Yeah, it's cold. It's cold to say the least, that's for sure. But Jameson Walsh, you get to believe the hype, NBA.com. Give him a follow on Twitter, at the Jameson. We'll be back with more Drive Time Sports right after this.
Now Young with two, lets it fly. It's good! Nick Young for three!
What's up, this is Nick Young, so I can see you listening to Drive Time Sports on AM 750.
Back for one last segment here on Drive Time Sports on this Wednesday edition of the show. And we'll move over to talk high school sports here for a second. Mentioned this briefly during the local news update at the beginning of the show. Late last night, the Utah High School Activities Association released the first consideration of regions for the 2017 through 2019 athletic period. And there are some massive changes. Emory would become a true 3A program across the board. But they would still see a lot of familiar faces, even though they would have the 3A tag. So for basketball and baseball, for instance, you have Emory, Grand, Manti, North St. Pete, Richfield, South Sevier, San Juan. That's all sports outside of football. Carbon would go to Region 14. Again, we're talking 3A. American Leadership, Delta, Juab, Mesa Prep, Providence Hall, Union. And then the other 3A division would have Grantsville, Juan Diego, Judge Memorial, Morgan, South Summit, and Summit Academy. I like that group, that 3A classification a lot. 4A, Region 9, is going to be just how Region 9 should. Canyon View, Cedar, Desert Hills, Dixie, Hurricane, Pine View, Snow Canyon. I mention that because Canyon View is a part of Region 12 as it stands right now. They're also a 3A South squad as it sits right now. Football doesn't change drastically. There's still going to be six classifications, just like there has been for the last two seasons. And that's really the big change. Right now, we only have six classifications for football, nothing else. We'll have six classifications across the board. 1A through 6A. In football 3A, the North region would have Carbon, Emory, Grantsville, Judge Memorial, Morgan, and Union. The 3A South would have Juab, Juan Diego, Manti, North St. Pete, Richfield, and Summit Academy. Makes no sense to me whatsoever. Makes no sense. And I'm not even getting into the logistics of Juan Diego and Judge Memorial and the competitive advantage that they have over the other schools. I don't need to go into great detail on that. There's no reason to. We already know that. But look at the South and the North. I don't understand how the first consideration of these regions puts Emory in the North with the likes of Grantsville, Judge, and Morgan. What needs to happen, and again, this will all be finalized on December 7th, so there is time for some of the stuff to maneuver. It would make a lot of sense to take Carbon and Emory and put them in the South and move Juan Diego and Summit Academy to the North. But it will never happen because they don't want to put Juan Diego and Judge Memorial in the same division. Teams are going to gripe about that. Teams in the North would gripe that they would have to play both Judge and Juan Diego. The biggest problem with this whole thing is, once again, private schools are being catered to. That's the biggest problem with this whole thing. The biggest problem, once again, that stands out to me. Being catered to. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. A division of football consisting of Juab, Carbon, Emory, Manti, North St. Pete, and Richfield, highly competitive. The problem is, and I can say this right now, if this was proposed, that Grantsville, Morgan, and Union would have a huge gripe that they would have to play Juan Diego and Judge Memorial every year. And I get that. That's a reasonable concern. However, the High School Activities Association obviously does not care about competitive balance because Canyon View has been moved up to 4A and Judge Memorial has been dropped to 3A. And looking at the student count, Canyon View is one of the smallest 4A schools. And I understand that Judge Memorial is in the somewhat of the middle of the pack, maybe the upper half of 3A as far as student body count. But the kicker is they're not a public school. We'll know the final results on this in about 7 days. You can check out the currently constructed regions at CastleCountryRadio.com. I want to thank Coach Vando and also Jameson Walsh for taking out the time to join us on the show. We'll be back to do it again tomorrow. Same time, same place. Be safe. I am out.